The following contains graphic discussions of murder and sexual violence. Listener discretion is advised.
I cannot convey any better the traumatic words that you'd hear on this 911 tape. And when I hear them today, my blood runs cold.
911, what's your emergency?
I need an ambulance. My daughter's dying, I think.
Rescue is needed. 3-year-old female child, unconscious, not breathing.
It's Christina.
No! He is wasting away a life in a jail for a murder he didn't commit, and worse, for his own daughter, with whom he loved.
There is a whole bunch of evidence now that links Masuk to the crime scene.
There is absolutely no evidence of any forced entry, any breaking in, and according to the defendant, the only people in that house with permission were himself and Christina.
This is Suspect Convictions with investigative journalist and Suspect Convictions creator Scott Reeder. I'm Willis Kern. In examining the tragic death of 3-year-old Christina McNeil in Bloomington, Illinois in June of 1998, we tried to answer many questions. One question we don't have to address is whether Masuk Nolan Wang is a killer. Since the day young Christina was killed nearly 20 years ago, Barton McNeil has contended that it was his estranged girlfriend, Masuk, not himself, who killed his daughter. But the judge in Barton's trial refused to allow the defense attorney in the case to present Masuk as an alternate suspect. McNeil was found guilty and sentenced to 150 years in prison. His claims of innocence were largely ignored until 2011, when Masuk was arrested and later convicted of murdering her mother-in-law, Linda Tida. During this episode of Suspect Convictions, Scott Reeder and I will examine the murder of Linda Tida and ponder similarities between the two crimes. Unlike the Christina McNeil homicide, which until this podcast was only covered by local media, the Linda Tida murder has captured worldwide attention.
Crest Hill, Illinois, September 5th, 2011. It was around 8 o'clock that Monday evening when Larry Tida phoned the police in this quiet bedroom community of 20,000, an hour southwest of Chicago.
A desperate divorcee falls for Mr. Nice Guy and his mom.
I think she was proud to be a family.
Beautiful.
She was happy, I could tell.
Oh, thank you.
But not long into the marriage.
What happened now?
Trouble comes home to roost.
What's going on with our checkbook?
Masuk was unpredictable.
Now Suspect Convictions peers into the strange case of Linda Tida's death. Scott Reeder, there are some real similarities, aren't there, between the mother-in-law's death and the death of Christina McNeil?
Yeah, there are, Willis. I mean, one of the things that strikes me as interesting is you'll remember that Christina McNeil was killed the day after, or even maybe even the night of, when Barton McNeil broke it off with Masuk Nolan. They had a big blowout in a restaurant that lots of people witnessed, and the relationship just came to an end right at that point. And then, of course, Christina died under mysterious circumstances either late that night or early the next morning. Then you look at the Masuk Nolan case. She killed her mother-in-law when her husband and her were looking at a divorce. Her husband, she thought her husband was having an affair. Things were going south. She was trying to at first to enlist her mother-in-law to try to help patch things up with her husband, and then she ended up killing her mother-in-law. I mean, so you kind of wonder, hey, if she had committed the first crime, it would have been very methodical. I mean, the killing of Christina McNeil. And folks were in the prosecutor's office were very skeptical because they were saying, you know, when she was presented as the alternate suspect, well, she would have had to been really careful in her planning and execution and everything else to have done this. And the most likely suspect isn't the person who could have broken in through the window. It's the dad that was sitting there in the house all along. Well, then we know, what was it, 11, 12 years later, she goes and kills her mother-in-law. And it's done in a really methodical way. And it's like, wait a minute here. The reasons they argued against her doing the first murder she exhibited in the second murder. Of course, the problem is they already convicted somebody in the first murder.
And the other problem, too, is the fact that this all happened 11 or 12 years later.
Yeah.
And anybody involved in investigating and prosecuting and trying Christina McNeil's case didn't have the benefit of knowing how Masuk Nolan may act out later on, say, a decade down the road.
Yeah, there were no crystal balls in the CID department at Bloomington Police Department to know, hey, this alternate suspect's going to end up being a killer herself. Maybe we ought to look at her a little bit harder this time around.
So the murder of Linda Tida occurred in Bloomington, Illinois, the same place that Christina died. But Linda Tida had to be lured here, and we're going to hear more about that as this story unfolds during our episode today. But who are some of the main players? Since the crime did occur in Bloomington, just like Christina's death occurred, who are some of the main players, Scott, that we have to look at in the Linda Tida death?
First of all, of course, there's Masuk Nolan, who was in a three-year relationship with Barton McNeil until the day before his daughter was murdered. And then he, went, of course, went on to – Barton went on to prison and after being convicted. Masuk later went on to marry a fellow by the name of Don Wang. Don and her ended up having a son named Donovan. He was 6 years old at the time Linda Tida died. Linda, of course, was Don Wang's mother, or Masuk's mother-in-law, at the time of her death.
And we also have a gentleman by the name of Larry Tida, who's an important part of this case. And you went and searched for Larry Tida and found him. And he is the husband of Linda Tida at the time of her death.
That's correct. I traveled up to the Chicago suburb of Crest Hill, Illinois, and interviewed Larry Tida, a really nice, gentle man.
Linda Tida had immigrated to the United States from China. She came to the U.S. to teach English at Illinois State University in Normal, but later began operating her own translating business. And Larry Tida, as Scott told you a little bit about his wife, described her as a brilliant woman.
A lot of the Chinese people, she helped quite a bit. And then she used to do medical calls. When I first met her, she would take calls like all night long from all these countries, and she was one of the only ones that knew some of the language to explain. She would talk to the doctor or what the problem was, and then she would interpret it to the doctor that was working on the person. She was very smart.
Larry and Linda Tida were newlyweds.
I met her through Match.com. She lived in Bloomington, and I was trying to get out dating a little bit, and I met her, and then she stopped one day, and I met her at the restaurant, and we chatted, and we had dinner, and then we just started meeting each other a little bit more. She was very friendly. Like I said, she helped a lot of people with a lot of lawyer things and paperwork, and she was always busy.
Larry said it was not uncommon for his wife, Linda, to receive unusual requests.
She got a phone call on Sunday that some people needed a ride to Chicago, that they'd pay her $500 to have her take them and meet them in Bloomington and pick them up and take them to the airport on that Monday morning on September 5th. Well, she got up and kissed her goodbye, and she left about 3 o'clock, 3:30, and says, I'll be back by 8 or 9 because we were going to go to a picnic. Well, she never showed up, so I didn't think nothing of it. So about 10 o'clock, then I started calling maybe once an hour, see if she's running late or car trouble or anything like that. And then it just continued on and on. I kept calling all day, and about 7 o'clock, it's Labor Day, I called Crest Hill Police and told them there's got to be something wrong.
There was indeed something wrong. Linda Tida had been tricked into driving to Bloomington. This is then Bloomington Police Detective Rick Barkas.
Most of the time when you have a missing person report, it's always a favorable resolution. The person left, didn't want to be, wanted some time alone, just needed to collect their own thoughts, and then once they were able to figure things out, they would go back home. So that's normally what happened. In this situation, nothing really set off any alarms right away. And this was on a Friday. Then that Sunday, I get a call at home saying that there were some people that might have some information about Miss Tida's disappearance. So I came in and started working that angle.
Little did Detective Barkas know there was a conflict brewing in Linda's family between her son, Don, and daughter-in-law, Masuk. Judge William Workman was a prosecutor at the time and working with the police to piece the case together.
The family situation with Don and Masuk was deteriorating to a point where they were talking and actively looking at divorce. Masuk was trying to get Linda on her side, but Linda was, according to Masuk, taking up Don's side of the dispute with the family, and they were on their verge of divorce.
Masuk had become convinced that her husband Don was having an affair.
She wanted to get Linda to Bloomington, and she had already attempted, and I believe it was just the week before, to talk to Linda. That's when she had driven up to Linda's home. Linda refused to have any contact with her. Mr. Tida basically told her to go away, that Linda wasn't going to talk to her. So she desperately wanted to talk to Linda. Linda was Chinese and did a lot of interpreting for a lot of the workers that work at a number of the Chinese restaurants throughout the state. And Ms. Suk used that by going to one of the Chinese restaurants there in Bloomington and talked to one of the waitresses that spoke Mandarin and talked her into calling Ms. Tida, saying that she had to go to Chicago, and I don't recall exactly what she was supposed to do for her, interpret for her in Chicago or just drive her to Chicago. And she was going to pay her $500 to do that.
As Workman explains, Linda was supposed to meet the restaurant worker in the parking lot of a Bloomington grocery store.
Linda, at the appointed time, drove to Bloomington, and I think it was like at 5 o'clock that morning, pulled into the old Cubs parking lot. That grocery store is not there anymore, but drove to the parking lot. We got video footage from that parking lot, and you could see that when Linda pulled in and parked there, Ms. Suk, then her lights on her vehicle came on. She drove up to Linda's vehicle, and they argued. You could see on the video there was an argument. One of the employees at Cubs reported that he was told about an argument, went out and saw two women arguing in the parking lot. And it was pretty clear that from that video, from the portions that you could see, that it did not appear that Linda wanted to have anything to do with Ms. Suk. But they did converse, and at one point you saw both of them get into each of their cars, and both of them drove away to the same location. They drove over to Masuk's sewing business. What happened next was that she had just basically drug Linda's body into the shop, or had it in the shop, put it in behind some clothes, and she was in the shop for a day or two. Masuk took Linda's car and drove it back to Chicago, parked it not far from Midway Airport, and then got a bus and took a bus back to Bloomington.
During the murder and afterwards, Masuk's 6-year-old son Donovan was with her. Detective Rick Barkas said the case took an even stranger turn from there.
Well, then she says she drug her into her place of a business and left her laying on the floor there for a brief period of time while she lay down and took an... She said she was exhausted, so she fell asleep.
Wait a minute here. You're saying that she strangled her mother-in-law to death, she dragged her into the sewing shop where she worked, and then just laid down on the floor next to her mother-in-law to take a nap?
Not on the floor. There was a sofa in the waiting area, and she laid down there.
Okay. I don't know about you, but you just kill somebody and your first reaction is, I need to take a nap? I mean, does that strike you as really weird?
There's a couple weird things here.
Okay.
Her son was also in the car, asleep.
And this is her 6-year-old son, Donovan?
Yes.
He was in the car. Didn't she bring her son into the sewing place when she took the nap?
Yeah, afterwards, yeah. I just don't know when.
Well, okay, as a parent of three girls, one of them who just turned 7, how on earth do you explain grandma's laying dead on the floor to a child?
You don't.
Later, during a police interrogation, Masuk said she left her mother-in-law's body on the floor of her shop for 2 days. Then, according to Judge Workman, who prosecuted the case, Masuk went looking for a way to hide Linda's car and dispose of the body.
But she had driven the car up to Chicago, to try to make it look like that somebody dropped it off and took a flight out of Midway and left our car there. She then, very methodically, we had video of her at the Lowe's in Bloomington, buying a shovel, buying a big blue tote that she was...
You mean like a big tub?
A big tub. That's what she had put Linda in. And taken all of Linda's clothes off, stripped her down, and threw it all into the dumpster outside of the shop.
Masuk called a friend who attended her church and asked her to come to her shop and help her lift a heavy container that she said contained china into the back of her Mercedes SUV. Then, along with her six-year-old son, she drove 80 miles and buried the body in a forest preserve near the Chicago suburbs. After being arrested by police, she led detectives to where she buried the body. Scott, all of this really can be summed up by just truly bizarre.
You got it. I mean, it is just bizarre as all get out. I mean, what kind of person has a needs help lifting a dead body of her murdered mother-in-law into the back of her SUV and calls up her friend from church to help her do it? I mean, this is just freaking weird.
It's strange and bizarre, and but when you look back on what had happened 10 or 12 years previously with the death of Christina, that's bizarre too, but really only in hindsight, isn't it? I mean, maybe it wasn't quite so bizarre at the time that death happened, but knowing now what we didn't know back then, we see some bizarre occurrences.
Well, yeah, we do, because, you know, Masuk was so meticulous in how she carried out this crime. She figured out this elaborate plot to get her mother-in-law to come to Bloomington where she could confront her and kill her. And then she came up with a fairly sophisticated plot on how to dispose of the body and how to hide the car and all of this stuff. I mean, so you have to ask yourself, could she have done that kind of level of planning and essentially set up Bart the day after he dumped her? I don't know, but that's something really should be looked at.
And Scott, she also apparently had her six-year-old son with her at the time she killed her mother-in-law. That is very strange.
Yeah, it is bizarre. I mean, who brings their child along to kill grandma? I mean, which is essentially what happened. And according to what she told the police, she dragged Linda Tida into the sewing shop and then went out, got her son, and they went into the sewing shop and took a nap. Now, how on earth do you explain to this child that grandma's laying there on the floor and not moving?
Taking a nap, I guess, right?
Yeah. You know, Bill Workman, who was the original prosecutor on the case, he's now a judge over in Lincoln, he suggested that perhaps that she just told the boy that grandma was playing a game, like hide and seek or something. And which I thought was weird because just last week, we had Rabia Chowdhury suggest something very similar may have happened with Christina McNeil when if somebody had broken in through the window to keep her quiet.
Both my daughters, my oldest daughter was very, very quiet, very quiet. And my second daughter, who's nine, is much more precocious and assertive, but she also gets frightened very easily. And I've seen them both in situations where they got scared and they just froze. If it was somebody talking to her that she knew, you know, who said, shh, don't tell anybody here, it's a secret, it's a game. Like, I can totally see one of my daughters at that age having played that game.
So there may have been games played when Christina McNeil died in 1998. There may have been some games played involving children in the death of Linda Tida in 2011. Scott, we've talked a lot about how Linda Tida was murdered, this gruesome, bizarre chain of events that unfolded. But what about why? Let's go a little bit into why Linda Tida was murdered.
You know, Willis, some people say there may have been a financial motive in her killing her mother-in-law. But for me, it seems to me that there's a level of anger here that was necessary to strangle the life out of somebody. And she was really angry at her husband, who she had thought was having an affair. He has denied it, by the way. She was angry at her mother-in-law. She'd gone up to the house a week or two before and tried to get her mother-in-law to intervene to help save her marriage, and her mother-in-law didn't want to have anything to do with her. there's just, and then she figures out a way to lure her mother-in-law to drive 90 miles under false pretenses so she could meet up with her. This strikes me as a level of rage to try to get even. And, you know, I guess I can't help but think that this is her way of leveling the playing field with her spouse who's wanting a divorce. I'm going to kill your mother. You hurt me. I'm going to hurt somebody you love.
Judge Workman says her motive was clear-cut. It was money.
She felt that there was a large insurance policy on Linda and that Don was going to be the beneficiary. And if Linda died before their divorce, then she was eligible to collect at least half of the insurance. That was actually, and she, I think, still maintained that she's due part of that insurance.
Others believe it may be about vengeance. Since Don and Masuk were in the midst of a breakup, killing his mother may have been her way of inflicting pain on the person causing her distress. Barton McNeil's attorney John Hanlon with the Emily Innocence Project believes there are strong similarities between the two murders.
Masuk killed her husband's mother, the female that that person cared for the most. Christina McNeil was the person that Barton McNeil cared for the most.
The Bloomington police detective we've heard from today, Rick Barkas, has retired. The Bloomington Police Department isn't saying much about either Christina's death or the Linda Tida murder investigation. Bloomington Pantograph reporter Edith Brady Lunny covered Masuk's trial and believes she knows why police are not talking.
I think one reason they don't want to talk is because they know the reason that we want to talk to them about it. And they know the reason the public is interested in this. It's not because they've been nominated for a good job award on this case, right? All this is coming up again because Bart McNeil is alleging that he's wrongfully convicted. And the other thing about this case that I'm sure, if I were in their shoes as prosecutors, police officers, state's attorney, that would keep me up at night is the fact that there was a second murder. The question is, if the police got it wrong, this person stayed out on the street and was able to kill a second person.
So there's a reporter who has covered the court beat in this community for a very long time saying that possibly had police gone after Masuk Nolan in the Christina McNeil death, it could have prevented another murder from happening. What do you think about that, Scott Reeder?
You know, of course, we don't know. I mean, if Masuk Nolan committed the murder of Christina McNeil, that's obviously the case. If she was the one that should have been convicted and wasn't, yeah, that's absolutely true. Of course, you know, we're looking at this case carefully. What's always struck me as interesting is if you go with the prosecution's theory, Barton McNeil and Masuk Nolan were two people that found each other, had a 3-year relationship together. Barton ends up killing one person on his own, and then 12 years later, Masuk goes and kills somebody on her own. What are the odds of two future killers finding each other and starting a life together? I mean, it just strikes me as extraordinarily coincidental. But when I brought that up to Jason Chambers, the state's attorney from McLean County, he didn't think it was all that unusual.
It's not something where I look at and I say, wow, that's what a coincidence. Because we oftentimes see individuals who have troubling issues going on in their life who are together. If I went and Googled murderous couples, I don't think I would just get a list of 2 or 3 people. I think I would get a whole bunch of top 10 lists of individuals who have been involved with each other and had similar ideations.
So, Scott, it's very apparent here that the current prosecution team in McLean County really doubts that there's much of a connection between Christina McNeil's death in 1998 and the death more than a decade later of Linda Tida.
Yes. And I tried to cut through the fog a little bit and just ask the current prosecutor, Mary Cole, if a new trial were granted for Barton McNeil, would it be a hindrance to re-prosecute him the fact that the alternate suspect went on to kill somebody else in a domestic situation? And she said, yes, it would. But she had this also to say about how she personally views this case.
Well, I see that other case and what little I know about it as a different case. Bart's attorneys have suggested that the cases are very similar and that they have similar motives. I don't see it that way. I mean, the other case involved an adult. This case involves a child. And at, you know, a very basic level, those are very different types of killings. It is very interesting that that took place. It is startling. It's unusual. But it does not change the evidence that was presented at the trial in this case. And that evidence is more than sufficient to convict Bart. So I do find it interesting. I don't find it exonerating.
Next time during Suspect Convictions, it's your chance to hear from Barton McNeil, the man serving a 150-year prison sentence for killing his 3-year-old daughter in 1998. Submit your question now. Send it to askbart@suspectconvictions.com. We'll be hearing from you, our listeners, and from some of the experts we've talked to next week when Barton McNeil checks in from Menard Correctional Center in Southern Illinois. That's next week on Suspect Convictions. Special thanks to Colin Thompson, WGLT General Manager R.C. McBride, and the production staff of Sound Ideas, including Mike McCurdy, Charlie Schlenker, and Ryan Denham. With investigative journalist and Suspect Convictions creator Scott Reeder, I'm Willis Kern. We'll see you next week on Suspect Convictions.